Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 142. My name is John. The heat was hot and the ground was dry, but the air was full of sound. It was March 2020. Gina and I always plan for one big vacation every year, but there's also a secondary getaway that happens around late spring, early summer, which we usually spend returning to places we like while saving the big vacation for a new place. However, sometimes circumstances or opportunities take us to new places on that secondary vacay. Our Utah and Oregon trips were great early summer respites. We had decided to try out New Mexico. We planned our dates, we planned the cities to visit, we researched Airbnb for places to stay, and we were literally seconds away from hitting the reserve button for our first place to stay when my phone went off. It was a text from my manager, stating that due to my coworker being one of the first 10 people in San Antonio to contract COVID, the office was shutting down, and we were working from home until further notice. You know the rest. 2 weeks to flatten the curve has morphed into 2 years of fear. When October of last year rolled around for our big vacation, we decided we didn't want to be in a pressurized fuselage where some fucktwat goes into righteous fury because a three-year-old dared to pull his mask down to eat a gummy bear. Instead, we opted to take a road trip around Texas, where the hysteria was much more in check. But now, it's been 2 years since we've been out of the state. We had gone out of the state, if not the country, every year since 2002. We're ready to get out, see something new. We decided it was time to take that road trip to the land of enchantment that we had put off 18 months prior. We decided the first part of the week would be in Roswell, with a day trip out to White Sands National Park. Then the second part of the week would be in Albuquerque and Santa Fe, because our anniversary would fall at the end of the vacation. We didn't think the UFO capital of the world would be appropriate. That was probably a good call. To be honest, the trip did not start off well. I thought Gina really liked the rental car we had picked up the night before, so at 8 a.m., as we put the last of our stuff in the car, I asked her if she wanted to drive. She interpreted that I didn't want to drive, so she agreed. In all of our trips, she has never started out driving. Within the hour, we were yelling at each other. Of course, I apologized not long after, and by the time we stopped in Segovia for a bathroom break, we were back on track. About 4 hours into our trip, Gina realized we had forgotten the brand new jackets we bought specifically for our trip. When we stopped in Fort Stockton for lunch, Gina decided we should go into the local Walmart to buy jackets for the trip and return them later if need be. Unfortunately, they had a really shitty selection, but we got a couple anyway. Now, this is an example of seeking an immediate solution. What we should have done was waited until we got up into Roswell or even Albuquerque, where they were actually expecting colder weather and may have had a better selection. So, my tip is if you run into a problem like this, think it through first. For lunch, we stopped at the Stagebrush Cafe in Fort Stockton, voted Best Special Occasion Restaurant in 2018 in a local reader's poll. I hate to see second place. Our waitress was friendly enough, but it took nearly 45 minutes for them to get our BBLTs. BBLT stands for Bacon, Bacon, Lettuce, Tomato, because theirs has twice the bacon in it. This translated to 2 strips of bacon for the entire flimsy sandwich. Apparently they didn't get the everything's bigger in Texas memo out there. Now, this is just the halfway point for us, just over 4 driving hours with a couple of pit stops along the way. We still had almost 4 more hours to go to get to our first destination. Turns out the Southeast New Mexico State Fair was going on when we arrived in Roswell. We decided not to join the festivities. 10 hours, 8 of them driving, and over 500 miles later, we got to our first Airbnb. Much like Texas hill country hamlets with their historic downtown areas tailored for tourists and day trippers, anything alien related you want to do in Roswell is closed by 6 p.m., if not earlier, along with all the surrounding gift shops, coffee shops, and eateries. Fortunately, you don't have to go far from the focal point of Main and Second to find open restaurants and a lot of your standard national franchises if you need to go to Target or one of the more unique McDonald's with a UFO-themed facade. The International UFO Museum and Research Center is easily the number one thing anyone should do if they want to go to Roswell. It's small, it's cheap, it has charm. You can sit in a small room and watch a documentary of people who witnessed the wreckage. One side of the museum is a timeline of the mysterious events and recitations of accounts from civilians and military personnel. From there, you go through a section about movies and TV shows that have referenced the Roswell event. And then you go through an area devoted to other supposed alien contact throughout the ages. So, do I believe an alien ship crashed near Roswell? Well, first, I'd have to ask myself if sentient life exists on other planets. Sure, I think sentient life exists elsewhere in the cosmos. If for no other reason, then the notion that humanity is the first to climb out of the primordial sludge and we are alone is a very depressing thought. Next, I would have to ask myself if such life would be both advanced enough to trek through space and interested enough in our civilization to take a closer look. Yes, both of those are certainly possible. Maybe I'm projecting here, but 2 years ago, after flying 3,000 miles, I drove up the north side of Maui on a treacherous road just because we saw on a map that there was a blowhole. Why wouldn't an alien spacecraft fly around an area where they tested nuclear weapons? Lastly, I'd have to ask myself that if an alien craft did malfunction and crash in the desert, would the government do anything and everything to hide facts from the public, up to and including threatening and discrediting witnesses? Abso-fucking-lutely, I think the government would cover it up and discredit anyone who talked. Hell, if something like that happened today, I fully expect the government to put a bullet in the head of anyone before they could talk. There's a gift shop in the museum, of course, as well as several more in the immediate area. You could probably stand out on the sidewalk and hit at least 4 with a rock. Alien Invasion across the street from the museum was my favorite for souvenirs. I liked their t-shirt selection, and they had a good mix of trinkets and magnets and other typical touristy mementos. If you don't want something alien-themed, but you want something unique, a block from the museum is Eclectic Treasures, which has a lot of beautiful stone carvings from myriad types of rock. It was pretty expensive. I did find a rhino carved out of a green rock that I absolutely adored, but I didn't want to pay $100 for it. But if I did have that kind of money for figurines, I found a handful of other truly beautiful carvings. On the plus side, the New Agers who ran the store had cats roaming around that were very friendly and affectionate, so that's always a plus for me. Near the UFO McDonald's is the Invasion Station gift shop. Even though I didn't like their selection of souvenirs, just outside the store there are some of my favorite alien-themed photo ops in the city. If you look at my Twitter feed for the aliens on the roof pointing at the sky, and the adorable cartoon aliens walking on top of a fence, that's where those were taken. If there was one problem with the alien themes, it's that there seems to be three or four alien statue poses that are used by everyone around town and just painted differently. I did not go to the Roswell spacewalk. I think the whole black light, psychedelic look to the place looked fun, but something I would have appreciated more 20 years ago. I think I would have gone into sensory overload pretty quick. All in all, I really did like Roswell, but I expected more than just a small handful of alien attractions and gift shops. Still, yeah, I definitely want to go back. We broke one of our dining rules on this trip out of equal parts necessity and convenience. The three rules are, number one, never eat at any place we can get at home. Number two, whenever possible, try something you've never had before. Number three, no Mexican food. It will never compare with the Tex-Mex we can get back home. That was the rule we had to break. To be honest, just like my hometown San Antonio, it felt like half of all the restaurants are Mexican food. That's not a bad thing, because there's lots of different ways to prepare dishes. It is a bad thing when you're in the mood for Thai food, find a Thai restaurant that shows open on their website, then you drive to the Thai restaurant to find out they aren't open at all. More to come about this later. You're really freaking hungry from driving and hiking all afternoon and early evening, and the thing you had your mind set on isn't available. What are you gonna do? For us, that begins with finding something that's actually open. We knew that chances are we would be breaking our third rule, but we figured if it's going to happen, New Mexico was a place to do it. I mean, the whole reason the rule is in place was because of what happened in Salt Lake City. No way New Mexico would let us down, right? Los Cerritos on Main Street became our choice, and they did quite well. I had the steak stuffed sopapilla, and it was great. Gina got enchiladas, and we had our first experience with the great New Mexico question. Green or red sauce? Depending on which restaurant you walk into, there are two ways the sauces work. Either you have green as the mild sauce, and the red as the hot sauce, or you have green as the hot sauce and the red as the even hotter sauce. The mildest of the green sauces we found was at the Cowboy Cafe, which was our breakfast the day we left for the second part of our trip. I looked at the menu and decided to get an omelet since I had pancakes for breakfast the day before. The alien omelet boasted ham, onions, and cheese topped with a fried egg. Gina asked if they topped the omelet with an egg. I thought, no, they gotta mean that they griddle up the ham and onions, put some cheese on top of that, and then an egg on top of it all. Nope, Gina was right on this one. I got a 3-egg omelet with ham, onions, and cheese, topped with another egg over easy, plus hash browns and a biscuit with gravy to boot. Gina liked the pizza at Dion's, which is a regional chain. I would put them in the adequate category, but on par with national chains. For me, the other culinary highlight was Black Cock Brewery. I mean, the name alone is going to pique my interest. They don't have a kitchen, but their food truck is parked outside, and they'll take your order to the truck for you. Gina got Irish nachos, which were waffle fries topped with corned beef and cheese. I got a bacon cheeseburger with some of the best fries I've ever had. The food was spot on. I couldn't finish all that they gave us. The prices for everything was reasonable, and I highly recommend it to anybody going to Roswell. I'd also like to suggest some taglines for the brewery. Put some black cock in your mouth. Get filled with black cock. Or you'll love the taste of black cock. I pointed to a sign in the brewery and said to Gina, "Hey, look, you can like them on Facebook so all your friends will see that you like black cock." To which she replied, "The important ones already know." And that's just one more reason why I love her. Between innuendo breweries and alien omelets, we took a day trip from Roswell out to White Sands National Park. 2.5 hours, 130 miles each way. Looking back, this was my favorite day of the trip, even though it took us a lot longer than we expected to get there. We drove out west from Roswell and planned to stop up in the mountains in Ruidoso for breakfast. Our restaurant choice had a line out the door, so we scrambled for a second option, the Log Cabin. This place also had people waiting, but it was a much larger establishment, so we only waited outside for about 15 minutes before we were seated. It was considerably colder, so we finally used our Fort Stockton jackets. I got the pancakes, and they were really tasty. However, once you added their melted butter and syrup, the pancakes practically reverted back to batter. It was a little funky, but it filled the pit. Unfortunately, with the additional driving and waiting for food, we lost almost an hour of our day. Back on the road, we made our way down towards Alamogordo and stopped at McGinn's Pistachio Land. Gina bought wine, I bought Bacon Ranch flavored pistachios, yum, and took a picture of their giant statue of a pistachio out front. At that point, we had the option to continue on to White Sands, but we decided instead to take a detour back up into the mountains about 20 minutes or so to visit Cloudcroft, which is a lovely little village that I would gladly go back to. The main tourist area is about a 2-block stretch, and we stopped in as many places as we could that were open on a Monday afternoon. Cloudcroft Brewing Company has a wide selection and was the second best brewery on the trip, but we were really losing a lot of time. By now it was past 2 p.m., and we still needed another 45 minutes to get to White Sands. Once we did, though, it made the whole trek worth it. The gypsum sand is so soft and cool to the touch, even in the midday sun. I flew my kite on a perfectly windy day. We walked up and down dunes, drove the entire stretch of the park, and simply marveled at the beauty of it all. I could go back to that area and spend all week just going back to White Sands, up into the mountains to towns like Cloudcroft, or down into the Tularosa Basin. We got back to Roswell much later than expected, and that's unfortunate, because the next day was yet another drive. 3 hours and 200 miles to Albuquerque. The drive was pretty tedious, but about halfway there, I got to see my first honest-to-God tumbleweed being blown across the highway. There would be many, many more over the next hour. We finally got into Albuquerque in the late afternoon and stopped at Bombs Away Brewery, which would be my favorite, even though I only sampled two of their beers. We still had almost an hour drive ahead of us out to Rio Rancho, where we were staying. It's normally not that long, but rush hour traffic stretched it out quite a bit. We picked Rio Rancho because it was outside the city and a little closer to Santa Fe, which we expected to drive to a couple of times. The next day, we drove up to Santa Fe. To quote Will Sterling, it was fine. My primary reason was to see another Chuck Jones gallery, and it was nice, but not as good as the one in San Diego. The round adobe Capitol building was interesting. We drove out to Prairie Dog Glass Blowing and bought a cute glass pumpkin for Halloween. After that, I can't say I much cared for Santa Fe. An hour drive from San Antonio is Austin. 25 years ago, I loved going up there. But now, the traffic sucks. And the town has turned into a pretentious twat. Yes, I'm biased, but I love the more grounded and, dare I say, proletariat feel of my hometown. Santa Fe is like Austin. Albuquerque is like San Antonio. We didn't go back up to Santa Fe for the rest of the trip. The next day, we stopped off at Alicia's Bagels and got to chat with the owner. He grew up in New England and learned bagel making from the owner of a store that he would walk by on his way home from school each day. The quality was top-notch, and it is easily the best bagel I've had this side of the Mississippi. From there, we drove to the northeast side of Albuquerque and took the tram up to the top of Sandia Peak, where I found the best brisket I ever had. I know, weird. The tram ride up to the top is pretty cool, unless you're acrophobic. Once up to the top, we walked a short distance on a couple of trails, but got back to the restaurant before noon, as they warned us repeatedly that potentially dangerous high winds would be coming through. The restaurant was understaffed, so we had to wait, even though less than half the space was in use. The menu was crazy expensive, but it cost money to move shit up a mountain. As much as it cost, the brisket Sammy was worth every penny. I've had some phenomenal slow-cooked brisket, but this took the blue ribbon. We spent the rest of the day walking down Old Town Albuquerque after coming down from the mountain. The next morning again began with a great breakfast at Central Grill. Gina had the waffle dogs, which has nothing to do with waffles. They're basically breakfast corn dogs, but they were really good. I had the special, blue corn pancakes. Let me tell you something. If they put those on the menu permanently, I'd go back to Albuquerque. Balls in your court, Central Grill. From there, we went to the ABQ Biopark to see all different kinds of animals. If you're scratching your head and wondering if I mean a zoo, you are correct. It's a fucking zoo. Don't give me this biopark bullshit. In fact, they also call their botanical gardens a biopark. So if it has plants or animals, it's a biopark. That makes every park a fucking biopark. Quit trying to be pretentious. You're not Santa Fe. Zoo. Botanical gardens. That's it. Afterwards, we stopped at another brewery and sat at the bar next to a woman and her lesbian friend. I know she was a lesbian because in the 30 minutes we sat there, the woman referenced her sexuality at least half a dozen times. I'm sitting there thinking to myself, I knew you were gay the moment I walked in. You really don't need to continually reinforce the obvious narrative. By that time, we decided to skip the botanical gardens and go back to Old Town until we could figure out what to do for dinner. Now, I've left out a couple of other instances, but this night really drove home the obvious problem for tourists in New Mexico. We drove to a restaurant the third or fourth time at least on the trip, but found out they were closed when we got there. We drove to another place to find out they closed early because none of their staff showed up. Any restaurant we went to, there was a 50% chance they were understaffed. What's going on that so many restaurants are understaffed, closed early, or sometimes closed permanently? The sign on the door at the once highly praised La Placita restaurant said it all. Quote, due to restrictions that were enforced during the COVID-19 pandemic, La Placita Dining Room has permanently closed. This space is being redeveloped and will be opening soon. Thank you. End quote. Parse that out, grammar experts. What do they say is the cause of their closure? Not COVID-19. They closed because of the restrictions that were enforced during COVID-19. And who enforced them? The dipshits up in that round adobe building in Santa Fe. The fucking government killed that business. I did notice the closer we got to the Capitol, the more masks we saw. Hardly any in Roswell except for the museum and a couple of stores. One or two places on our day out to White Sands. About 75% of the time in Albuquerque. But all over the place in Santa Fe. Their state government is unapologetically killing private enterprise. And the fear there doesn't seem to be fading. If you go to New Mexico anytime in the near future, I would absolutely call ahead to any restaurant and make sure they are open so you're not wasting your time. Fortunately, 2000 Vietnam Restaurant was available. Yes, that's the name, and it was a delicious little hole in the wall. Our final day took us to lunch at Tin Can Alley, which is essentially a food court. Try the arepas at Guava Tree and grab a beer at Santa Fe Brewing Company. From there, the last event was a tour of the Hot Air Balloon Museum, which is a little expensive, but hot air balloons are what the town is most famous for. That evening, we dined at Matucci's Italian for our anniversary. That was surprisingly good, since on the outside, it looked like a regional Olive Garden. The service was helpful and attentive, but not overbearing. On our anniversary, it is my custom to have a Manhattan after dinner. Matucci's had something I hadn't seen before. A Manhattan flight, made three different ways. So good. It would have made for a nice end, but we stopped at a bar a few blocks from the house that advertised karaoke so Gina could hear me sing a little. While we waited for my turn sitting at the bar, Gina looked down and realized the diamond had fallen out of her ring. We started looking for it, and shortly a few people around us had their camera lights on, everybody in that area of the bar searching. Fortunately, we found it, and we have insurance regardless, but it's still not how you want to spend an anniversary. That was the most important, but not the only thing we temporarily lost. On our shopping stroll through Old Town, we left one of our bags at a store and didn't realize it until 2 days later. When Gina called to see if the bag had been left, the shopkeeper immediately said they tried to find us on that day, but couldn't, and had kept it hoping that we would be back. So everything turned out okay. The last morning, I walked out the door to take the luggage to the car, and floating across the sky was a hot air balloon. I stepped out farther for a better look and realized there were several more drifting through the cool, cloudless morning sky. I just watched, enchanted by the peaceful, colorful, meandering bags of heated air going literally wherever the wind may take them. I took photos, but mostly I just stared, with equal parts fascination and envy. I envied the travelers, but even more so, I envied the balloon. I wasn't thrilled about the drive home, roughly 10.5 hours, if you drive nonstop, and we left about 1.5 hours later than we had intended. Some of those roads are so lonely, and they just seem to go on forever. It's sometimes mentally grueling, And I truly appreciate truck drivers who do such long stretches on a routine basis. We did find a really good burger joint in Lubbock called Twisted Root, and I would definitely go back if I'm ever up there again. Once the sun set, driving down country roads became a little nerve-wracking for me. I could just see a deer jumping out in front of the car. Fortunately, we made it safely. Even with stops for dinner and bathroom breaks, we pulled into our driveway just under 12 hours from the time we left Old Town Albuquerque. We put about 2,300 miles on the rental, brought back gifts, knickknacks, clothes, photos, and memories. We cleaned out the car, dropped off the dirty clothes by the washing machine, and cuddled with three cats who let us know they missed us. The mark of any good vacation is whether or not you would go back. The answer to New Mexico is yes. Yes, we would. Hopefully, next visit will be at a time of less fear and despair. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.